Hello. Have you ever wondered what Cambodian karaoke sounds like? No, nor have I. But I have the answer, and it's something like this. Very good. That's what Cambodian. Oh, Jesus Christ. So I think that's a dad and his daughter. I started smiling and dancing and. Oh, yeah, they want me to sing now. So I'm going to do a runner.
Yeah, Cambodia. Hello, welcome. My name is Vinny, and I am on a quest to get to 100 countries. These are my audio travel diaries. I bring a recording device around the world so you don't have to. I've been to 95 countries. I'm on a mission to get to 100. This is one that doesn't count because I went to Cambodia about 20 years ago. So this one doesn't count as a new tick off, but it makes for a great podcast. It's an absolutely fascinating country. Coming up on this podcast, we will travel to Angkor Wat, an ancient temple in Cambodia. We will spend time on a beautiful island in the south of Cambodia, eating fish. Well, I say that, you won't actually get to eat the fish, but you'll get the experience of being there. And if you get some fish fingers and eat them while listening, it's basically the same, isn't it? We will also discuss the dark past, including Pol Pot of Cambodia, and we go wandering around chatting to a lovely lady who has a lazy husband. All that and more as we explore Cambodia. My name is Vinny. You can donate to host these podcasts. It doesn't cost an enormous amount to make these podcasts, but it does cost money. So if you're enjoying it, donate at vinnywhite.co.uk. That's vinneywhite.co.uk. All right, let's get into it. Enjoy Cambodia. Hello and welcome to a railway station in Thailand called Kabinburi. I've just got a train ticket from here in the middle of Thailand to the border with Cambodia, and it was 50 cents or 50 pence. I mean, it would be hard to grumble about that. Obviously the train is not going to be incredibly beautiful and it won't have air conditioning, and it's coming into the station now and looks as if it may be held together by sellotape. Yeah, it's a big old diesel mother hubbard. Lots of sellers with bottles of water and bizarre shaped fruits are getting on with me. And as I wake myself up, it's reserved for monks. Okay. In England we have second class and first class. Here it's all second class and monk class. And we're off. Oh, it's a very packed train and it's rumbling through some green fields in central Thailand, and there's lots of women walking up and down with bags of mysterious shaped fruit and deep fried horse penises. No, they are just sausages. And yeah, all is well. Let's go to Cambodia, and when I'm not surrounded by hundreds of people jostling to sell me oranges, I will tell you more. Wandering around a temple, a lady tried to sell me some t-shirts, which were quite nice, but not really my cup of tea. I wanted to chat to her, though, because I love a chat with the locals. She told me she has a lazy husband, and she's doing a little bit too much of the work. I think she might have fancied me, but she probably didn't. Okay, let's get into it.
You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, because we have to bring my daughter and son to school in here.
Yeah.
Come to school.
So let me understand your routine. You get up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
You go on the motorbike with the kids.
Yeah, with my son and my daughter and me, my husband.
Oh, and the husband.
Yeah.
You go to school, you drop the kids off.
Yeah.
Where does the husband go?
My husband, he work in the another temple. He work in the temple.
Okay.
When I come here, I come with my boss.
But the problem is, at the moment, that when you finish your day, you go home.
Yeah.
He should be cooking. He should be cooking a meal, shouldn't he?
He's not cooking.
He should be cleaning the plates a little bit.
When I'm sick, he cooking.
Okay. Yeah, well, just tell him you're sick.
When I'm sick, he cooking.
Do you ask him to do the cleaning? Because you have to ask him nicely.
I have to work, but one week he have holiday and Sunday. But he have to clean the clothes.
Okay, so he does that. That's good.
One week he have one holiday and Sunday.
And he cleans the clothes.
And I come here only, I come alone here.
Okay.
My daughter, my son, he not school also. Holiday.
Do you work 7 days a week then?
No holiday.
No holiday?
Yeah.
Never?
Never. Every day.
Husband to clean the plates.
It's for girl work.
Is it?
Yeah.
For girl work. Yeah. Men can't do the plates.
Sometimes.
Men cannot possibly do dishes. You heard it here first. It's out of my hands. But that's what was said by a woman. I listen to all women and appreciate them because I'm a feminist. For that reason, I will not be doing any washing up. I think that was the message. Any complaints should go to pierce.morgan@imacock.com. Welcome to the spectacular scene, which hopefully I'll do a reasonable job of describing. That is Angkor Wat. Welcome to Angkor Wat, the biggest religious set of buildings in the world. I feel very much like Lara Croft in Tomb Raider, only I'm not a badly animated 90s hot potato. But I am in a land that was inspired. I think it inspired Tomb Raider. I believe there's a temple here in Angkor Wat called the Tomb Raider Temple, which I assume is where it was either the original inspiration for it or perhaps it was in the film. Either way, I haven't seen the film, don't really care. If you really want to be knocked out with amazement, then just come here. Now, Angkor Wat is on the Cambodian flag. It's the only flag in the world to have a building on it. You can see why it means so much to the Cambodian people, because it's just absolutely massive. Now, I'm going to go outside, away from where I currently am. So I'm in one of the hundreds of buildings that is Angkor Wat. I took a long walk away from where all the tourists are, out into the jungle. If you ever heard the podcast on Guatemala, on Tikal, this might be remarkably similar, because actually has the same kind of vibe in many ways. And again, lots of structures throughout the jungle, some of them quiet and some of them full of people taking selfies. This one has no one in it at all. Huge sandstone blocks have been put into place using clearly ropes, because each of the sandstone, huge blocks, each the size of a man, has holes in it where they would, of course, lower it into place on ropes or maybe even vines. As I look through this perfectly symmetrical, tall stone foreboding building, I can see through the doorway, which I assume would have had a wooden door on it at one point, nothing but jungle one way, and I turn around the other way and I see nothing but jungle and a distant lake. 20 people standing on top of each other, and you'd be able to touch the ceiling, and all the way around it, sometimes very clear and sometimes almost invisible, are base reliefs. Reliefs in the sandstone, depictions of people coming together with animals. Lots of people depicted as half people, half dragons, maddening, big eyes, big faces, and wonderful headgear. So let's talk about where I am. And to do so, I'm going to walk out the back here, overlooking the lake. The temperature is about 30 degrees, and here I am in the jungle. And in the very far distance, you can hear some music from one of the Buddhist temples. That is Angkor Wat. But it is really hard to hear. And I'm glad it's hard to hear, because I want peace and serenity. Let's talk about this place and why it's here and what it's all about. And I think it's bloody interesting. Cambodia had a golden age, the Khmer Empire. 10th to the 14th century, the Khmer people, the locals, who were really influenced by the Hindus, India, yeah? And they said, hey, you know what we need is a whole bunch of religious iconography. We need to put it all in one place. And you know where we need to put it? We need to put it in the capital of our land, Angkor. Now, here's the mind-blowing thing. When you look at this, you think, there must have been so many people to build this. You would think, yeah, well, you'd certainly be right. Angkor was, for a while, the biggest city in the world. It way outdid any of the European competition. Wat means temple, and Angkor is the name of the place. So Angkor Wat, the temple in Angkor, the capital. I've just gone for lunch, and a lot of the salespeople have learnt to make people laugh by saying, Angkor Wat? Which, I didn't do any justice. They really put their back into it. They said, hey, you want a bottle of water? Because they're from Italy. Hey, you want a bottle of water? And I said, yes, please. And they went, Angkor Wat? And I laughed. Now I've done it again. It's actually a bit shit, isn't it? But anyway, Angkor, the world's biggest city at the time. And Hindu it was. What was weird was, over time, it became Buddhist, as did the region. They didn't deface it. They just started using it for Buddhist ceremonies. And it still is today. I've seen a few monks walking around in their orange robes. If I just walk briefly back in to this large building, way away from the main beautiful buildings that are depicted on the Cambodian flags, those crowned temple buildings. And I walk through over some large stone plinths. I can see a sort of altar, really, to the Buddhist religion, and some steps with some incense sticks that have long gone out. I don't know when last anyone was in here, but it certainly feels like it was a long time ago. You can come here and pray. As an atheist, not my thing, but I do actually have an overwhelming sense of inspiration. It is, in the original sense of the word, awesome. And I do feel quite lucky. As I said recently in a podcast, I always think with these things, if you can just contemplate religions, people, humanity in general, when you come to these places, then that's good enough for me. You don't have to dress up as a monk and take a vow of silence to appreciate all the people that came together to make this. And really, the true inspiring nature of humanity in general. 1 million people living here in Angkor, using Angkor Wat on a daily basis, the Angkor temples diminished, vanished. And then in the 15th century, the empire collapsed. Vietnam and Thailand, neighbouring, did quite well. Cambodia, not so much. So, Cambodia was swallowed into a big French empire in 1863 called French Indochina, right? And so this bit, Cambodia, Laos and a bit of China, all were under French rule, French Indochina, which is why, if ever you go to a Vietnamese place, they have the French bread. We now know, according to the inscriptions, which some people have managed to translate, the construction of Angkor Wat is thought to have taken approximately 30 years, which is nothing. Just look at the huge scale of some of these temple buildings. As I say, the biggest religious bunch of buildings in the world, and it took just 30 years. It also took about 300,000 labourers and 6,000 elephants. Angkor Wat was initially designed and constructed in the first half of the 12th century during the reign of a guy called Suryavarman II as the King State Temple and capital city. It was built without the aid of any machinery, as there wasn't any, was there? It was just get involved. The walls are decorated with thousands of bas reliefs, and they're amazing. Some of them are completely invisible as if they've sort of been eroded through time, but the ones that are visible are important deities and figures in the Hindu and Buddhist religions. 5 million tons of sandstone were used to build Angkor Wat. 5 million tons, a number I can't possibly comprehend. And the main bit, where all the tourists currently are, way away from me, probably about a 10-minute walk, is the bit that was on the Cambodian flag, Mount Meru. Mount Meru, in Hindu mythology, is the sacred five-peak mountain, right, that stands in the centre of the universe. A mythical, depending on your position, mythical mountain that stands in the centre of the universe. It's said to be that of the Hindu chief gods. A guy called Brahma, he's the creator. A guy called Vishnu, he's the elephant dude, the preserver. And Shiva, the destroyer, reside on the top of the mountain. And the whole point in Angkor Wat was to sort of demonstrate that in an architectural form. So it was built mirroring what Mount Meru in Hindu mythology is, which is why it looks a little bit like some mountain peaks. As a tourist, I have to say it's really weird, because if you take a walk out into the jungle, which I highly advise you do, you'll see lots of huge stones with reliefs of different mythical gods' faces, and they're just semi-grown over. I'm just walking around it now, some of the beautifully moss-coloured huge behemoths put into place by man and elephant. It's got a special place in my heart as well, because I came here 25 years ago when I was going around the world as a man in his 20s, and I've lost all the photographs, which is sad, but in a way it's not, because perhaps it's an opportunity to embrace taking a few on a digital camera today. Me perhaps looking a little bit older now. Give me a second. Security guard just walked in. That's weird, I didn't expect that. I'm just going to walk out the front, just because it's kind of weird talking into a microphone on your own while a security guard watches you. He's obviously found out where he can come for a cheeky break without too much attention. He found a nice little stone pillar, whopped out his phone and overlooked the lake. Oh, and look, here's his motorbike out the front. He must have driven here on his little bike. Yeah, he's just come for a little bit of an escapism, isn't he? Play with his phone for a bit. Obviously, there is a need for security here. I mean, if this was anywhere else in the world, I wouldn't be allowed to walk into the temple I just walked into. And I certainly wouldn't be allowed to just randomly walk around the woods looking at these amazing stones that have been left and lost to time because of theft. And people over the years have looted these places. You still could. You know, you'd have to be one hell of an arsehole, but you still could actually rob the place, which is why you do see the very occasional security guard, but not much in the way of security. And of course, the Cambodian people wouldn't dream of messing with a temple, because they're very superstitious people and they know it would be reflected very badly on them from the gods above. It's $37 to get into, which for Cambodia is incredibly high, being that a beer is $1 and a meal of simple noodles from a street food shack is $2. So it's a lot of money, but where else are you going to see this? Nowhere. I'll walk back to one of the main structures. To give you an idea of scale, by the way, I got a one-day ticket, but you can get a 1 week ticket, which means you come back every day for a week. Small family on a moped in the distance. Don't know where they came from. Makes you think, if you're a Khmer, if you were knocking around at the height of their building of this about 800 years ago, you must have thought, well, this is it. In the same way that I suppose today, when we look at the cities of today, we think, well, that's it. They're never going to move, are they? They're always going to be there. That's how things go. What on earth could possibly come along to change anything and make this whole place a,
a relic that's lost to the forest. Perhaps next time you walk through your city, you should reflect that one day it too may be lost to the jungle. It could happen, because it did to the Khmers of Angkor Wat in Cambodia. In more recent years, and we'll cover this a little bit later in the podcast, there was one guy that fucked everything up for this amazing country, this beautiful country full of smiley, happy people and deep, deep culture. And his name was Pol Pot. And I think we'll cover him. It's kind of annoying, really, that we have to cover him because, of course, he was a first-class, bona fide, full-service arsehole. And as a result, was a mass-murdering fuckhead. He only did 4 years in power here. 4 years. But it is inconceivable how much damage that man did in the 1970s. And whenever you read Cambodian history, probably the first thing that pops up is Pol Pot, one of the worst dictators of all time. If you look at sheer numbers of population killed as a percentage, he is the worst dictator of all time. And yeah, as I say, we will get into that. A bit depressing though it is pretty fascinating. But I think it's really important to remember about places like this, despite occasional complete and utter arseholes, flash in the pan arseholes, the history of Cambodia is much deeper. The Khmer Empire were rocking this place. Angkor was for a while the biggest city in the world, and the temples inside that, Angkor Wat. And although it does cost $37 to come in, it's a small price to pay for such an utterly, mind-blowingly spectacular achievement that's still nestled in the jungle today. Almost no vehicles apart from that one guy on a moped and the security guard back there. Enormous, perfectly symmetrical, majestic buildings towering above the jungle. Not entirely dissimilar to some of the stuff you might see in Central America, but far more ornate when it comes to stone carvings and depictions of deities. As I walk now past a huge stone carving of some serpents' heads all splayed out, an extremely ominous beginning to walking into one of the main structures. And as I do it, I walk up remarkably steep steps. I look out over the jungle and what feels like forgotten buildings. As quite rightly, one of the wonders of the world. Whoa. Here I am near Angkor Wat in a town called Siem Reap. Well, the dog's quite intimidating. Oh, okay. Yeah, alright, okay.
Just about
oh, fuck me. Hang on. Oh, here we go. Right, I was going to do a bit there about how I find dogs quite intimidating in alleyways. I don't find people in alleyways intimidating. I do find dogs intimidating in alleyways. So here's a couple of tips for you. To be honest, I was only going into that alleyway because I don't really like the noise of traffic and I wanted a bit of peace. Hiya. So I could tell you... some random man smiling at me. Everyone smiles at you in Cambodia. Anyway, I will endeavour to get out of the traffic to give you some tips on survival in Southeast Asia. And the first one is, and it sounds a bit callous, but pick up a rock. Dogs in this part of the world are quite badly treated, and it's not uncommon for locals that feel intimidated to pick up a rock to make sure that the dogs don't attack them. I've never seen a dog attack anyone, and I've never been attacked by a dog, but I have come very close to losing the entire contents of my bowels. So what I would advise you do, pick up a rock. You'll never need to use it, but as soon as the dogs see you pick up a rock, they all disappear. Obviously, I would never condone hitting a dog with a rock, unless, of course, you really are genuinely about to be attacked. Then you might need to, but you never will. You never will, so pick up a rock. The next tip is, hello, hello. You're cute. What have you got there? A little torch? You got a phone? All I've got is a rock. I know, it's rubbish, isn't it? Hello, bye-bye. Kid there ran up to me and showed me that she had a little flashlight, a little torch. And I was like, I've got a rock. And she looked at me as if to say, why have you got a rock? May I also advise that never hit a child with a rock either, in case you've only half been listening to this podcast. Yeah, I was going to give you a couple of other tips. The other thing, I'm a bit of a global tightwad, so I always arrive to these countries with very long hair and unkempt to everything, and then get it all fixed here. I just went to a Cambodian barber who charged me $3 to cut my hair. Did a great job, gave me a shave, which I didn't actually expect, didn't ask for one. Very happy. There was a moment it was all going very Kim Jong-un, but I said, can you grade that out a bit? You know, Kim Jong-un, not a man that's blessed with good looks. I'm never going to North Korea, so I couldn't give a fuck about getting in trouble here about that. I might be trying to get to 100 countries. I'm not fucking going there. I don't want to give money to that regime. What? I mean, just when you thought, how could that regime be more arsehole-y to its own people? How could it be more cruel and punishing to its own resident population? It decides to back Russia in attacking Ukraine and putting its own soldiers through essentially a march towards a cannon in Ukraine. I mean, talk about arsehole. So, you know, with that in mind, didn't really want his hair cut. I love it when you do comedy and you get a laugh, like, even though they didn't understand. That was just very well timed. That person was just walking past me laughing to someone else, but it's almost like I stole the laugh. Yeah, so that's good. The other thing is, like, bits and bobs that you need fixing. I need my glasses tightened to get that done in Cambodia. Use the country. Use it, you know, because A, it's going to be a lot cheaper than your home country, and B, it's just more fun chatting to people. For example, in the barber just there, I just discovered Cambodian Speed Garage. Yeah. It's Cambodian Speed Garage. And you might want to hear a sample. In the interest of copyright, I'm only doing this because it's a sample. I'm just going to play a short bit. I don't want to get in trouble. This is what I just heard as I was getting my hair cut. This is Cambodian Speed Garage. Yeah, it's quite good, isn't it? Apart from the auto-tune bit at the end, I quite liked it. Nice. So that's my tip. And then another tip, if you're in an expensive country, book your bus overnight, because you save on accommodation and buses can be quite boring. Tonight I'm going over, I'm not in an expensive country, but I am going overnight on a bus all the way south to an island, which I've forgotten the name of. But I think with these podcasts, and do correct me if I'm wrong, no one really gives a shit what places are called, do they? I mean, it's not actually a travel guide, is it? Really? I will, once I get there, let you know what it's called, but I've completely forgotten. Co something. And the other tip is, bring a load of old clothes that don't mean anything to you, and wear them, and donate them as you go. So, for example, if you've got an old pair of boots and you're going to rent a motorbike, great! Ultimately, wear them on the bike, and then at the end of the trip, give them away. I'm always giving out boots. I always buy the same pair of Timberlands, and I've now given out the same pair of Timberland in over 4 countries. Oh, and my final tip, actually, just because it's just popped into my head. If you feel guilty about walking past people in the street that are begging, I get it. Of course I do. I'm not a cold-hearted bastard. Do something about it, but in a different way. Go to kiva.org, K-I-V-A.org, and donate a microloan to someone on the ground in that country, particularly if you're affected by what you see. So, for example, if you see a middle-aged woman with lots of children and she's begging, just bank it, just remember it, and then get to kiva.org and make a donation to a middle-aged woman in Cambodia with lots of children that would like a donation to set up whatever it is she's setting up. Maybe it's a clothes shop. She might need money to set up a hairdressing business. She might need money to set up an agricultural thing, so she'll need equipment. Other good-hearted, wonderful people around the world will donate too. So I've been donating to kiva.org for, I can't remember, 10 years. Anyway, it's up to you who you donate to, but kiva.org is very helpful. And by the way, sorry about the background noise, but I did try to go up an alleyway and got shit scared by a dog, and I'm still carrying a rock. So I'll just put that down now. That's that done. So I jumped on a night bus and I went down to the southern tip of Cambodia, ended up in a place which I can't remember. Then I got on a boat and ended up on an island called Koh Rong. Koh Rong, that's the name of the island. It's the second largest island of Cambodia, well worth a visit. About 60 kilometres of coastline, mostly gorgeous sandy beaches. And I know this because I've rented a moped and toured the whole of the pretty little island. Had a lovely time on my moped, checking out all kinds of gorgeous beaches. The next day, back in town, I went down the beach near where I live, in a very small town. And I say very small town, it's the biggest town on the island, but still a very small town. And I went down to the beach, found the shade of a palm tree, and here I am explaining, well, some history of Cambodia. Before I do that though, here's me talking about the roads on the island, the lovely little roads on the lovely little island of Koh Rong. In true weird Cambodian style, the whole island is very well paved and easy to get to, with the exception of anywhere you want to be. So the port town on the south tip, where you get dropped off on the boat, is where I'm living, and it's great. And this bit, the roads are horrific. Then you get out of the town and the roads are fantastic. Poured concrete all the way, no stress. But then you'll go to a beach and the road will run out. Particularly if you go to Lonely Beach, which is where I was. Which, if you fancy a bit of life, as the name would suggest, probably not the beach for you. I'm more of a sort of nighttime fun guy. I'm a fun guy. So here I am on the southern tip, not far from the port. In fact, so I can look out of my window and see the boat leave every day. And tomorrow I'll be on it. It's been a few days living here, and it's bloody gorgeous. I'm not really a beach guy, you know. I work for myself all year, so my mind's always thinking, what should I be doing? Should I be building a website? Should I be paying some invoices? Should I be upgrading my server? Insert any number of spectacularly boring things in here. And of course, I probably shouldn't be sitting on this beach. And if I'm doing something, like, I don't know, building a little camp or starting a fire or getting drunk, then I'm fine. But if I'm just sitting about with a book, forget it. Not my cup of tea. Which is why, really, I do these podcasts. That and the fact that I like to remember what I've been up to, because I've got a terrible memory. And if it provides you some entertainment in the meantime, that's great. I'm sat at the southern tip of Koh Rong, not that far from my hotel. I found a quiet spot in the shade of a tree. To give you an idea of this, the scale of this island, you could walk around it in a couple of days. You could certainly drive around it within a day. And there are no real vehicles apart from mopeds and tuk-tuks and a garbage truck. But I haven't seen a car. I don't think you're allowed cars on the island. Your average Cambodian family that lives here, of course, certainly wouldn't have a car. They would have a motorbike. And they may have welded onto it some sort of a sidecar or put on a trailer to help them with their daily day. But most people just pop around on incredibly unsafe mopeds. My one yesterday didn't have a back brake. It had a crack in front brake. Let me tell you something about when you're going down a dirt track and it's getting very dark
and there's lots of big rocks and you need to apply brakes because it's at about 25% angle. You do need a back brake, turns out. Just science gets in the way, doesn't it? Front brake, wheel slippage. But try raising this point with the rental company and they'll say, sure. But that's Cambodia for you, you know, and that's why I like it, you know. At the end of the day, it's $10 a day to rent a moped. He didn't even charge me for petrol and had a great time. So, you know, as always, boring thing to say, but it's true. Don't drive at night. Don't drive drunk. And if possible, wear protective clothing. It is so hot that I had to say no to that. If you put a pair of jeans on me in this heat, I would fucking melt. All you would see is a puddle of what looked like condensed milk and a pair of jeans. And you'd say, well, alas, he has fucking evaporated. Eviscerated Vinny. Right then, I'm going to talk about Pol Pot in a minute and the dark history of Cambodia, but to give you a flavour of where I am, you might hear that the wakes come up because a boat's just come past. But I'm on the seashore underneath some palm trees, on the ocean shore, I should say, Gulf of Thailand, and I'm underneath some palm trees and everything's lovely. Everything's lovely. I may at some point get a scorpion run up inside my shorts and have a little go on my old fella, which you will be the first to know about that. All this frivolity and comedy, and now let's make it really fucking dark, because I'm going to tell you about the history of Cambodia. The history of Cambodia. And it's kind of ruined by one guy, as is often the case. So recap, Cambodia, the country sandwiched between Thailand and Vietnam, always hot, should be a tourist hotspot like its neighbour Thailand, perhaps an economical powerhouse, much like Vietnam is becoming, and indeed a tourist hotspot. But it's neither of those things, really. It's not. And let's find out why. So let's start in the Golden Age, the Khmer Empire, 10th to the 14th century. Khmer people, discussed it a little bit in Angkor Wat. They were the people of this land. They were Hindu, and they converted to Buddhist a bit later. Capital, Angkor, was for a while the biggest city in the world. 15th century, the entire empire collapsed, as often is the case with empires. Vietnam and Thailand were doing reasonably well at the time. Cambodia, not so much. It was swallowed, therefore, into a big French empire in 1863. It was called French Indochina. So that's Laos, a bit of China, and Cambodia. Now, fast forward a long time. Hang on, I've got a ant climbing up my leg and it's just bit me. Fuck. Oh, there's another one. Oh, no. Oh, no, don't make me move again. No, I'm going to power on. A couple of ants won't stop me, particularly when I get into the gruesome content that's about to come up. It's going to look seriously inconsequential. Okay, Pol Pot, he was a peasant, and his family had some rice paddies, and rice got expensive, right? And so Pol Pot's dad made quite a lot of money out of all the rice paddies, and he said, you know what, I'm going to send my son to the capital, Phnom Penh. If only he didn't. So, Pol Pot studies Buddhism for a year, foregoing pleasures and living a very simple life, as is the Buddhist way. Once that year's over, he discovers ladies and knocks about with ladies. He gets a scholarship studying engineering in France. Now, I've slightly left out an important detail here. When the hell are we talking about? Well, the answer is we're now up to World War II, okay? Now, the Japanese, as previously discussed, I think, in the Philippines and Taiwan podcasts, the Japanese just jumped into Indochina, right? They saw what was going on, and they saw that France was very busy dealing with the Germans in Europe, and they said, hey, look, why don't we do a land grab and try and get a whole big empire, yeah? After the war, the Japanese left. So, if you remember Pearl Harbor, the Japs decided to bomb in Pearl Harbor, and the Americans said enough is enough and dropped two atomic bombs on Japan. That stopped the Japanese empire expanding and seriously contracted it. So that's what's going on. We're in World War II. The Japanese have retreated. They've gone, right? Now, Cambodia doesn't really want the French back. Cambodia's got a new king. And they're like, I don't know, man, like this is quite a good opportunity to not go back to how things were. I'm not sure if we really need this French thing going on. Pol Pot
is now studying engineering in France, right? He's got a scholarship. Again, it's like all those sliding doors moments in history. If he hadn't have got a scholarship, then he wouldn't have gone to France. And if he hadn't have gone to France, he wouldn't have done this. He popped into Yugoslavia, right? And he saw communism and he learnt about the first-class cock Stalin, right? So he's in Yugoslavia, just taking a little break from his engineering course in Paris. And he learns about Stalin and he thinks, do you know what? I like the idea of this. I'm going to join the French communist movement. I'm here in France. I like France. It's quite good. But I'm banging to this communism thing. So let's do that. After 3 years, he leaves France, right? And he's got his degree. Presumably, I don't know what it was in. I presume it was engineering. And he got the boat back to Cambodia. Funnily enough, the same boat he originally got when he came out. And he comes back to Cambodia and he thinks, bloody hell, this place is a mess. The Cambodian king, previously essentially a puppet to France, signs to the end of French rule, right? He signs the end of French rule and now we're 1959. Right, cool. Pol Pot is back here in Cambodia. And as I say, he's not very happy with the way things are going. He goes to Vietnam because he just loves this whole communist thing. And he's like, the Vietnamese are commie. And I know the Americans don't want them to be, but I'm going over there to work out what is going on with this whole communist thing. I like what I saw in Yugoslavia. I think the communist idea is great. I presume at this point he'd also read like some Marx and stuff. And he was like, you know what? I am banging to communism. So the Vietnamese commies teach him stuff. And he comes back and starts a political party here in Cambodia. Right at the time, the king of Cambodia abdicates and turns from a king into a politician. Right? So Pol Pot can't be bothered with getting elected as it's hard work and the system is a bit rigged anyway. It really wasn't that fair. So he wants a coup, right? So he gets a job as a teacher while he's in the sort of shady communist group. The king, now the prime minister, says he wants power for life. Hello, that's a bit wrong, isn't it? 1 minute you're the king, you abdicate from the throne, you say we want to be prime minister, and now you're getting all power hungry. Okay. So, the king hears about this Pol Pot guy and calls them the Khmer Rouge, right? The Cambodian Reds. He says, I don't know who these people are, and I don't really know who this Pol Pot guy is, but I've heard about him. I don't like the sound of him. I know he's a commie. Communism, red, Cambodia, Khmer, yeah? So, we're going to call them Khmer Rouge. We're going to call them the Cambodian Reds. Cool. All right, then. I don't think Pol Pot was too happy about the name of his party being the Khmer Rouge at first, because he didn't name it. And as you'll discover, he was a control freak. However, he got used to it after a while. Okay, this king is now PM and he says he wants power for life. The year is 1968. Fast forward a few more years, 1975, the USA had been bombing thousands of bombs on Cambodia, attempting to make Vietnam not communist. In come the Yanks, think, I'm sure we can get this whole communist ideology out. No problem. We can make Vietnam a not communist country, a democratic country, and everything will be grand. What could possibly go wrong? Everything. The Vietnam War was a complete and utter fuck up. I think I did a podcast in Vietnam. Yeah, I did, didn't I? It was a long time ago. Yeah, I did. So hopefully it's covered in that or any book you want. If you're in America, just talk to a Vietnam vet. What's going on? The Americans have been bombing Laos, Vietnam and Cambodia, all because a lot of the Vietnamese were like running over the border into Cambodia and Laos. And the idea was if we bomb Cambodia and Laos and plant mines, then ultimately the Vietnamese commies will meet their demise. Didn't really work. Vietnam was unified as a communist country. So failure. Right, what's going on then in Cambodia, where I am right now? So it's about this point, 1975, everyone thinks a new group of Cambodians running the country is probably a good idea. I mean, after all, Cambodians wouldn't kill Cambodians, would they? I mean, let's run this thing from Cambodia. Let's stop all this outside influence. So the year is 1975 and Pol Pot comes into power, does the coup he's always wanted, forces his way into power. Some people think, don't know who this guy is, doesn't seem to be like, he wasn't like Hitler, he didn't do long speeches and rile up the people. It was actually quite stealth, like not a lot of people knew who was running the place at first. But they soon started to hear whispers when he started to do some mad things. things like empty cities. Yes. So this is pretty weird behaviour. Empty cities. And it is the weirdest thing to do. It's such a bizarre state of affairs. Even for a tyrannical fuckhead dictator. Pol Pot empties cities, no compassion for the people that needed, you know, medical facilities. And he said, you know what we need? I'm a peasant. I used to work on the land. My dad used to work on the land. I think we need everyone to work on the land. And like the doctors of the hospital said, what me? And the, you know, engineering professionals said, what, sorry, me? I'm actually more into sort of building roads in the cities or, you know, various infrastructure. I said, sorry, do you want me to move to the countryside? This seems really weird. But you seem to have some weapons and I have no choice. Okay, that's fine. So everyone works the land. That's the concept. So the point here, and it is fucking mental, but Pol Pot's idea was, right, I don't want all these educational elite. Sound familiar? Yeah, well, move past that. So Pol Pot's whole idea was, I don't like these educational elite, right? I grew up on the land. My dad grew up on the land. Land is the way forward. If we can just get enough food, we don't have to rely on outside sources. We don't have to rely on neighbouring Vietnam or Thailand. We can self-govern. So what we really need to do is get everyone out of the cities and get them working the land. Everyone. So they decided to abandon cities, right? And then it got really weird because they decided to abandon the concept of money, right? So the Khmer Rouge blew up the Cambodian central bank. They did it themselves, right? Not to make sure that no one else got it. They blew it up because they were like, it's time to start a new system of bartering. Even though globally everyone had thought this money thing, although it's got problems, seems to be quite a good idea. He's like, nah, fuck it, blow up the bank. Money becomes worthless, and what we're going to do, we're going to have a bartering system. Also, if you want more food, then you can inform on people that have got loads of money, and I'll just go around their house and take all their money. So if you want to be an informer, i.e. a secret policeman, that's great. Just tell us who's got the money, who's a bit of a knobhead, who's planning a coup, and I'll go around there and kill them. Okay? And then you can get some food. And food is only allowed through communal kitchens. Right? So, and this is, you're going to think I'm making this up. He banned hunting. He banned fishing. He even banned foraging the land. So the idea was he provides everything. He is the absolute power-hungry, monolithic figure at the top that will provide. He's your dad, yeah? You don't need your parents. He's kind of like your dad. And he is going to set up communal kitchens and everything you could ever possibly need. He's going to be your man. As long as you work hard. And by work hard, I mean fucking hard. I mean 15, 16-hour days in the fields, even though you don't really know what you're doing. All of this was summarised by a time there was a 10-year-old who was digging up a sweet potato. And remember I said that foraging was banned. He got caught and he got killed, right? That's how fucking mental this had become. A 10-year-old was killed for digging up a sweet potato. That is the ideology that we're dealing with under Pol Pot. So kids were often taken from their parents because they were like, you know, if we had the kids grown up in a family unit, in the sort of traditional nuclear family, they might trust the parents more than me and I might not be able to influence the kids as much as I want. So why don't we take kids often away from their parents? Let's also ban schools. Schools are rubbish. We don't need that. And should we ban religion as well? So it was like, well, I was going to say it was like North Korea. It might actually, possibly, I mean, no one really knows, have been worse than North Korea. It's certainly a reasonable comparison. Just absolutely, there's no other word for it, fucking mental. So he killed up to 2 million people in Cambodia. That's a quarter of his own population. And a lot of this was done by death camps that were set up in the former schools. So schools were turned into places, well, I mean, I use this term loosely, courts of law where they go on to punish you. Obviously, there was no court. They just make up whatever they want, torture you until they get a confession, and then put you to work in the fields until you die. It was fucking gruesome, and I'm really sorry to be talking about it. And it's, I cannot help but notice just how utterly, devastatingly beautiful this place is. And while I'm telling you this, sat under a palm tree, a coconut tree, looking out over crystal turquoise waters. It is just so weird to think that somewhere that is clearly so paradise-like could ever
be so utterly horrific. But that is what he did. Pol Pot closed the country. No phone, no mail, no flights, apart from a few from China and Vietnam, because they were commies. And he basically killed anyone with a brain. Anyone intellectual. He got so paranoid towards the end of his four-year reign. I will talk about that reign time in a minute. Yeah, he got so paranoid towards the end of his reign, he'd kill anyone that even appeared intellectual. There's rumours of him killing people that wore glasses because he thought them to be intelligent intellectuals. I mean, clearly a paranoid schizophrenic. Absolutely first-class lunatic. He invades Vietnam. Holy fuck. Well, this was a mistake. He invades Vietnam, despite sharing some ideology with them. So it's a bit of a weird invasion. But he does that, and the Vietnamese say, fuck this, there's no way I'm putting up with this. So they come in and sweep through Phnom Penh. Pol Pot thinks, uh-oh, I'm out of my depth here. These guys are really good. I am out of here. Does a runner to Thailand. And that is the end of his four-year reign, right? You would think that would be the end of it forever, wouldn't you? And then, you know, he's tried for war crimes and killed. No. And this is the really weird thing, right? He comes back after the Vietnamese have left. He comes back and the UN and Europe support him. Basically because he's not Vietnamese. And they're like, well, he's not part of the Vietnamese commies. We hate them. So he's probably all right. I mean, they must have known about the atrocities he committed. And I just find it really disheartening that the world would say, yeah, this guy's okay. But apparently they did. Now, that said, he never got back in power sufficiently. And it wasn't long after that he got fat. He had a stroke. And even his loyal followers leave him. At this point, because he's back, and as I say, he's not quite in the position of power that he was, but he's still doing gruesome things, including killing the families of his loyal followers. All right? So he's back, not quite as much power, and he's killing people. I always thought that, like, you know, when so many dictators, you look back and they're like, well, he did a lot of damage, but he was in there for 20 years. He was only in there for 4 years. 4 years of reign. 4 years. He killed up to 2 million people, a quarter of the population, in the late 70s. And this guy has caused complete and utter devastation. And psychological damage, right? Then you've got the Yanks, who have been leaving all these mines everywhere and spraying the fields with Agent Orange, hence the REM track, Orange Crush. You've got a country that's just on its knees and, like, psychologically so damaged. Like, can you trust your neighbour? And not only are they psychologically damaged, they're also physically so damaged. You know, these mines are going off every day. The Agent Orange is having an effect on births now, even after Pol Pot and the Americans are gone. You know, people that were eating produce from the fields that were sprayed with Agent Orange, their kids are coming out with birth defects, and cancer went up. I mean, just look up the damage that Agent Orange does, and it's you know, there's a reason that it's illegal and a war crime to use it now. So what happened to our buddy Pol Pot? Oh, I'm not even going to say that's a joke. Let me say that again. What happened to the complete and utter fuck cunt that is Pol Pot? Well, he dies under house arrest in 1998. Yeah. So he got prosecuted, but he got prosecuted, like, by the Cambodian authorities at the time after his reign. And because he had so much power, he managed to negotiate hanging out in his own house, which I don't know where he lived, but I assume it was some sort of a palace. So he died in a palace under house arrest, as I say, 1998. Some say he killed himself, as he knows he was going to be extradited to the USA, and where he'd obviously pay for those war crimes. But if he didn't kill himself, and no one knows, then it's fair to say that he never really paid for any of his crimes. And he said to a journalist, "My conscience is clear." Which, in fairness, is exactly what a psychopath would say. I mean, it'd be weird if he said, "I've made some horrific mistakes, and actually, I've looked in the mirror and realised I'm a devastatingly awful, paranoid schizophrenic that has left a trail of human destruction that will take generations to get over. And for that very reason,
not only am I humbly sorry, but I can only see the logical step to get out of this is to shoot myself immediately. You would think he'd say that, but he didn't say that because he was a cunt. So there you go. That is Pol Pot. I mean, what do you say after that? How's Cambodia today, I guess? Well, look, I guess that a lot of the young girls and boys wearing bikinis and swim shorts that are doing a gap year after their A-levels or going around the world or perhaps from Australia on a holiday, whatever. Whoever are the people on this beach behind me, behind this big set of rocks, which luckily is keeping me from them, because I'll tell you what, it would be a bit weird walking up the beach having this conversation in front of them. But anyway, there's a smattering of young, fairly sexy people on the beach, not far from here, who probably don't know anything about Pol Pot. I don't know that, but I would certainly imagine so. And they probably know nothing of the Khmer Rouge. And look, I don't know, make of that what you will, but the reason that you can eat a grilled barracuda and all your veggies and get a nice cold beer for $5 right here, right now, is because this country is so devastatingly behind. And it's so devastatingly behind because in large part due to Pol Pot, and also due to the Americans bombing the eastern flanks of Cambodia as well, this country has been going through a very difficult reawakening ever since. And it's so beautiful, and the people are so hospitable and caring, and not one person has ever tried to rip me off here. And ow, something just fucking bit me. Ow, maybe it's time to wrap this up. I'm getting eaten alive. Yeah, how can I conclude? Cambodia is an extraordinarily beautiful country. I've actually been here before, so it's not a new tick off for me. But I have been, I can say now, to 95 countries. I'm on a quest to get to 100, not far to go. In that 95 countries I've visited, there are numerous countries. I'd like to say there's only a few, but actually there really are a lot that are extraordinarily welcoming, hospitable, kind, caring, considerate, and just fucking nice people. And I think that's a really wonderful thing to reflect on, actually, that I'm not saying there's only a handful that are like that. I actually think the majority of countries that I've been to have been like that. And I don't think that's because I'm lucky. I think that's because human nature really is good. However, it's worth mentioning that Cambodia is certainly, if we're going to put some sort of ranking in this, very high up the ranking of just being sound, wonderful, deeply caring and lovely, happy people. And isn't that wonderful? 40 to 50 years after Pol Pot's devastating reign on this country, they're not letting it get in the way of their daily life, and they're making do with what they've got, and they're doing a job not only a really good job, but actually a job that I think could possibly be a bit of a template for the West. Yeah, they haven't got a lot and they don't need a lot, and they make do with what they've got. And if the power goes off every now and then, it will today, it does every day, that's fine, we'll make do. If there isn't all the food that is on the menu, hey, I can't make you a pineapple milkshake, but I can make you a mango one. Are you cool with that? Of course I'm fucking cool with that. So I've said it before and I'll say it again, and I really want us all to just think about this a bit more. Disparity is the reason for unhappiness. The most unhappy countries in the world, including the United States of America, have a despairing disparity. The gap between rich and poor is massive. If the gap is smaller, you are happier. It's not about how much you have. It is not about that. It is about the gap between the guy at the bottom and the guy at the top. And over recent years, globally, we've been going absolutely the wrong way. 65 people own half of the wealth in the world. I'll say it again. I shouldn't ever have to say this. I think the number's actually slightly less now, but I'll say it again. A few years ago, last time I checked, 65 people owned half of the wealth in the world. Imagine all of the money in the world, put it in one big pot, halve it, 65 people. Meanwhile, what have we got? 8 billion sharing the other half. And even that, of course, with incredible disparity. So, that's why Cambodia's happy. The gap between rich and poor isn't very big. And they've come through the other side of a devastating arsehole. And good for them. And I wish we could all... I wish that everyone could come to Southeast Asia. I really do. You know, particularly wealthy, snotty kids that go to Eton or Harvard that are almost definitely going to be working for oil companies and governments of the future. Come here. Just learn how happy you can be sitting about in the sun, having a massage and a mango milkshake and laughing with new friends. Yeah. Cambodia's rocking. It's absolutely brilliant. Pol Pot's dead and it's fucking great. It's a good slogan for the tourist board, isn't it? Undiscovered Cambodia. Pol Pot is dead and it's fucking great. Alright, see ya. Oh yeah, donate at vinniewhite.co.uk. Bye bye.
WeMakePodcasts.com